Best, greatest home for talk about Japan and games, and Japanese games.
Season two.
Yes, we round out season one finally after our 300th episode.
Who saw that?
And now coming? I know. All so many surprise characters. Who was your favorite? mine was the banana guy wearing sunglasses because that's what the kids like these days. Yes, but for talk about Japan and games and Japanese games. Did I say that? I'm your host, Mark Gaming Jesus McDonald. With me, we do not have, on advice of his lawyers, Gabe De Leon, so he will not be getting an intro or nickname. Pending litigation, not against us, but maybe we'll go into that in a future episode. That's some breadcrumbs, folks. See where that leads in a future episode, but. We do have, let's see, who do we have? We have a woman who tonight she's going to Mario Party like it's 1999, Tina Carter.
Nice.
Still playing Mario Party.
Yo, I got to do what Nintendo says. Nintendo says, hey, bitch, here's an overpriced re-release of an old game. I'm going to be like, hell yeah, give me that.
Nintendo? Would Nintendo do that?
Could you believe?
do they do that? Do they ever really release their games? We'll talk a bunch more about that, but it was between that or Shadowgate 64, which I think we might have talked about on another episode, but
we did, and I mentioned that like that game would have been super cool in VR, and then a couple of people messaged me like, girl, this already exists, and there's a Shadowgate VR game. Who knew?
Wait, what? There's
a
really?
It's not, you know, Shadowgate 64 VR. It's an entirely new Shadowgate game for
but like
VR.
Licensed, fully real Shadowgate. It's not like Shadow Door or like some like knockoff like
it is the
a
first
Kickstarter
in the Shadowgate saga.
Spiritual
Shadowgate
successor.
VR.
Oh shit. Is it on a Quest? Quest 2?
It is on Quest, yeah, Oculus Quest.
All right, Tina, we got to hook you up with the Quest.
Oh boy,
let's see. You know, suddenly don't sound very excited.
Did I just derail like a thing that you were going to do, and then
No. I'm going to the next. Going to the next name. Rolling along, man who has picked his share of crosses, John Ricciardi.
Oh yeah, I have.
Oh
man,
yeah,
that shit is great stress relief.
Yeah.
Yeah, people don't talk about those games enough. Picross, I mean, there's maybe because there's like 17 million of them now, but like...
It feels really like good. They did for a long time. It was kind of the sleeper game, but this is like 15, 16 years ago.
right, it first came out on like Super Nintendo in Japan. Like that was when it started. But yeah, I've been playing the Sega one, the Sega Picross game, and I finished all the puzzles with no assist, which is like, you know, not getting any help, basically.
So you're basically like in Picross, night, you're like recreating that? These. In Picross, forgive my ignorance, but you're somehow recreating these little like, whatchamacallem, dot graphics. Pixel art things via puzzle. It's like just like a Sudoku style brain teasing puzzle thing, sort of.
Basically. I mean,
using numbers.
Level. Yeah, using numbers and. There's a couple different modes, but I just usually play the regular mode. But it's good, like brain, like it's good for calming me down at the end of a long day and like just kind of winding down in bed. Like, because you know sometimes you'll play games like after playing Final Fantasy 14 and doing like a dungeon or something and then going to bed, I'm like totally wired for like the next 2 hours. So like something like this will completely like chill me out. So yeah, it's been my chill out thing lately. It's pretty nice.
Well, speaking of Final Fantasy 14, a man whose life. Whole life right now is packing. That's in real life, not the game. Although, have you played the packing game, Roy Blakely?
I've seen GIFs.
Okay.
I can imagine why it'd be
cathartic, but the real thing.
Are you enjoying the real thing right now? Where are you going? What's going on? What's happening?
So, my current apartment was definitely like a pre-pandemic lifestyle in mind when I picked it out.
I seem to remember it was largely based upon their cat-friendly policies.
That's right.
Was like very like cat forward, cat positive.
Yes.
Attitude.
It's really difficult to find pet friendly places in Japan. It's even more difficult for cats. For some reason, they're like, oh, you want to have a small dog that's going to piss and shit all over the place on little mats? That's fine. Oh, you have a cat, hold the fucking phone.
Yeah.
That's a whole different situation. I don't understand why. Pisses me off.
Clean up scratches, I guess, is why, probably.
But I mean, like, they end up ripping out the floor in every apartment when people move out anyway. So,
and dogs fucking bark, by the way.
They're noisy, and Japanese people hate noise. So it's like, I don't get it. Like, if you go to any website for Japanese apartments, and you just turn on, like, it'll tell you, like, oh, there's 10,000.
Right.
Apartments in the general Tokyo area. Then you click on the like pets okay.
You like filter for that thing.
And it reduces down to like 500 or something.
And the worst part, sorry to interject again, but that's the worst part is it's not even actually pet okay. If you get real specific, it's willing to discuss the possibility of pets.
Right.
And
sometimes they're willing to maybe hear you out.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes that means dog's okay, cat's not okay. Mm-hmm. Or like one cat.
So you've been dealing with this as you've been looking for your next place because you want a bigger place. Is what you're saying, right?
Yeah. We have our current situation is my office is also my bedroom, and I have to like put away the beds to take out the desk.
That gets old real fast. Yeah.
And Sarah's office is the kitchen, so.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. God bless you guys for, I mean, that's what we did for the first year almost of the pandemic. And it was just like, all right, this will not work. Like this cannot stand. And then had to move to a bigger place. But so you found a place.
Yes.
Awesome. Congratulations. Congrats. So
yay.
Without revealing enough that the thousands of crazy stalker fans of yours will be able to hunt you down and love knife you. speak in general about this, the new apartment, and maybe like a rough idea where in Tokyo it is.
So, right now I'm in Setagaya, which is huge. Like, you probably can't figure out how to knife me if I just give you that much. And I'm just moving slightly west from where I am now. So just like a little bit further from the city center.
Are you staying in Setagaya?
Yeah.
Okay, good. So you don't have to...
they still can't find
You still have to go to the Kuyakusho and re-register your new address, but you don't have to go to like the old one and a new one and do a lot of extra stuff.
Yeah, and it's like I'm still kind of close enough that some of the hot spots that I would like to go to hang out are still relatively close. Like Shimokitazawa is pretty close.
Okay, really?
Sangiojaya.
Have you tried the pizza in Shimokitazawa?
I got it on Uber. I haven't had the luxury of going there in person yet, but
what did you think?
I thought it was pretty comparable slice replica, you know?
Yeah, it's okay. It's solid.
I mean, that's a good pizza then, because slices.
It's not as good as Pizza Slice, I would say, but it's close. It's like a little, it's like an approximation. It's a local. If Pizza Slice is not available on Uber Eats, which it's not a lot for some reason, the pizza is a pretty good, substitute. So how far from your current place, how far of a walk?
So a walk, we actually did the walk once on Pikmin Community Day. We walked there and it was like an hour and a half, I think. It was a lot.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's actually
what?
Yeah.
But the guy is a big coup, Mark.
That's fucking crazy. Wow.
Well, we were stopping to do Pikmin stuff, but largely that's about how long it took.
Jesus Christ. All right. Well, how are your little flower children doing? Well, how is Pikmin Bloom? Any updates there?
Good. I just unlocked Pink Pikmin, which these must be a new thing because I thought I knew what Pikmin looked like, and these things are ugly as sin. They don't even
damn.
They don't even look like real Pikmin in my mind. Like, I almost
well, these to... were in, they were the flying Pikmin, right? I want to say these are in Pikmin 3. Yeah, they were in Pikmin 3.
I think I never played that one, so.
Okay.
It was my first encounter with them, and ugh. not cute at all.
They have a kind of weird,
yeah.
Bigger eyes.
They look like they're wearing nerd glasses.
Yeah.
Do they fly in Bloom?
They do.
Very helpful. Okay.
Their deal is they can bring stuff back faster, but you need they don't carry as much, so you need a lot of them, like gnats, like the ugly gnats that they are.
It's weird that they don't have like eyeballs. They don't have pupils. The white ones don't, I guess, either as well. And the white ones are kind of like a little zombie like at times, but. So Levender, are they like updating that? Are they doing new content? Are they doing like there's like not like a Thanksgiving event going on or anything?
They did a community day. That's the most of it, where it was like if you walk 10,000 steps on that day, then you get a special badge. Hmm. But it took like over a week to get the badge. I don't know. It's not a great first attempt at like, you know,
right.
An event really.
Come to think of it now, speaking of Thanksgiving, a lot of people might be listening to this. It is Black Friday. So, and somehow we end up on like Black Friday almost every year. It seems like the podcast, because I always think to like, God fucking bless the people waiting in line at like 3 a.m. to fucking get into Best Buy to like step on somebody's face in order to get a George Foreman grill for like $5
like,
or
God whatever bless you're doing. The people but who have to go to work during all of that shit. Well,
those are sainted. Those people are like, they are fucking sainted because having to deal with those people, especially now, like this year, could you imagine in America with fucking like anti-vaxxers and fucking, I just don't even want to think about it. But I do want to ask people for their Black Friday stories. If we were smart, we would have done this ahead of time and talked about them on this show. But maybe people will have some good ones from this year. So we'll remind you at the end of the podcast. But go ahead and tweet those at 84play. We'll do on the next podcast. Black Friday, I have kind of a bizarre fascination with, because it is this just like fucking human car crash in slow motion. It's just this like capitalism writ large in all of its like ugly, glorious, terrible fucking nightmare. It's just like pure, unfettered, just the worst parts of
consumerism,
human nature, and just everything. Oh,
can I tell you my wild Black Friday 2021 story that I already have?
Of course,
not
please.
To oversell it,
very topical, yes.
My local grocery store decided to sell these Black Friday bundles. I'll give you guys three guesses of what's in them. Just like
your local grocery store here in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's Thursday as we're recording this, but they had a Black Friday. It's like literally like even branded Black Friday and everything.
This display has been up for over a week already. And it's called Buraku Friday. Like right on the signage. This is Black Friday.
First of all, are all the items black? Was there some miscommunication and misunderstanding? And it's like
the
black
the
licorice.
Best part,
yeah.
The best part is that the answer to that is a definitive no.
Okay.
You can't even give them that much.
All right.
It's just
That's
a
good.
Cellophane bag with Black Thunder candy bars.
Wait, but it is kind of. Okay, yeah.
And then a bunch of random chocolate that's clearly about to expire, and they just want to get it off the fucking shelf.
Wow.
Like, it's not even all dark chocolate. There's, like, white chocolate and shit mixed in there.
They're taking Black Friday as an excuse to get rid of old Halloween candy, I think, that didn't sell
Japan's simultaneously
earlier.
Trying to do Halloween candy and also trying to do Black Friday and kind of not really getting either of them right.
Yeah.
But it means more candy, so, you know.
Is anybody here shopping for anything on Black Friday? I might get a TV if Costco Japan has a good Black Friday deal. But is anybody looking out for any like Amazon Black Friday specials? No special shopping. Cyber Monday. How about Cyber Monday? Nothing.
You know, I looked at the sales on like PSN and stuff, but there was nothing. I guess it's just one of those things where like if I am interested in something, I probably already have it. Yeah, it's not as exciting here. I mean, it's just becoming a thing, though. It is weird that they're
sort of
that it's carrying over here in the same way that Halloween did, like where, you know, because why does it even matter here? It's not like necessarily the busiest day of the year. There is no Thanksgiving here. But still, somehow it's made its way over. I think that's the power of the internet.
There's no Thanksgiving here, but I did notice. So the Japanese has a Thanksgiving holiday, which was Tuesday. And I did notice, did you guys notice this? I noticed a lot of holiday decorations up on Wednesday. They like just went up on Wednesday, which I wonder if somebody had heard like, oh, you're supposed to put Christmas stuff up the day after Thanksgiving. Oh, no, also,
go ahead.
Turkeys appeared in my local grocery store around in November. Yes. So I have one. I'm making one.
Were they labeled Taki or were they labeled like?
No, they're honest to God. Like they're not Butterball, but they're a Western brand. I forget what they are. Yeah. Wow. Believe it or not. Yeah, we a little expensive.
I guess it was a weird, they called it Labor Thanksgiving Day, which I don't even know what that actually means. Are we giving thanks for labor? Anyway, but like,
exactly.
It's, I don't know. I just totally lost track of the thing I wanted to tell you because
it's not Thanksgiving in the Western sense of Thanksgiving for sure. Yeah.
Right. No, it's totally different. But what I was going to say is the thing about here, and I only noticed this recently in maybe like 3 years ago and largely because of Starbucks, but like November 1st, suddenly Christmas trees are up here. It's like it's literally like that day after Halloween, people start putting up holiday stuff already and Starbucks starts selling their holiday drinks. It's like. Boom. I thought it was bad in America when people started doing stuff, you know, early, but like here it's getting out of hand.
Well, see, that's what it's always been like for me because we have Thanksgiving in October. Thanksgiving is like the second week of October.
We Canadians.
Yes, Canadians. As soon as Halloween is over, Christmas starts. There is no in between.
Why did you guys have no like you're not celebrating the pilgrim thing. So what is Canadian Thanksgiving like trace its roots to why
I don't actually know because we also color in like we also make hand turkeys and color in pictures of pilgrims with buckles on their shoes at school on that day.
I mean that did kind of led to things you know, but well, all right, anyway, how do we segue for that? What are you most thankful for, Tina? I'm thankful for Mario, the new Mario Party. Oh, okay, yeah, well, let's talk about that. Good segue. And so I don't want to be dismissive of Mario Party at all, but honestly, is there anything new at all? Is it just more, okay, it's the same kind of thing. You know what you're getting. Like, is there stuff to talk about with it? Honest question.
I mean, honestly, you're kind of asking the wrong person because I haven't really played Mario Party since Mario Party 3, which is why I bought this one. Because it is a bunch of shit from Mario Party 1, 2, and 3.
Like, oh, wait, it is? It's like acknowledged as a like a super pack of the greatest hits or something?
Yeah, so it's Mario Party Superstars. And basically it's just, you know, hey, grown adults with money and nostalgia, this is for you. And they've like taken a bunch of retro, I say a bunch, it's like five. But retro boards from like the early Mario Party games, and
I see.
Made them all shiny and added some new mechanics.
I thought you knew because you said
they're actually acknowledging it this time. No, well, I'm just because it's always that, but the fact that they're actually like just not even trying to hide it this time and just being like, yeah, it's the old ones that you know.
Did you know that Mario Party 1 actually? I had to look this up after you said it, but actually came out like 2 weeks before 1999. The first
I knew
it was like December 1998.
No, I mean, you know, I knew it was around. John, 3.5 hours goes into every nickname. I don't know if you know this or not, but like research, I have an intern 24/7 working on it. But also, yeah, I spend like 3.5 focused hours on it. So,
right.
I really like that it's a bunch of the old mini games that I always enjoyed with
$60.
The same music, but it sounds good.
Tina.
Oh, I didn't pay for it.
US dollars.
I didn't pay for it. So the backstory here is my husband was like, I want to fucking play Mario Party. And I'm like, well, you know, there's a new one, but it's so expensive. And he's like, I'll buy it. Boop, boop, boop. So here we are.
All right. So is it as good as you remember, or better or worse, or like, how is it matching up with your,
well, your nostalgia? I'm an impossible customer. I'm an impossible customer in that, like, as soon as the game, the mini games that I am really, really good at behave a tiny bit differently, I'm like, this game's fucking broken. I would never lose this game. And it's stupid. But okay. It has like an entire online portion that's been added where you can just like play mini games with other people over the internet.
Yeah.
Which I don't know if that's something that used to exist in other Mario parties, but it's my first experience with it. And it's really fun to actually play those mini games against somebody who can actually beat you. Because when you're like a little kid playing with your Nintendo 64, always playing against the computer, at a certain point, even if you set their difficulty to like super expert, you're just going to beat them because, you know, you're a kid with nothing else to do. And
really, the computer's not, I have no idea about anything exactly about Mario Party
AI,
but like the AI is just totally defeatable, I guess.
Yeah, no, it's a very different experience playing against other people versus playing against, you know, the CPU gamer. Right. So it's fun to go on. They've got a bunch of different modes where there's like, you know, the recommended daily mini game packs. And when you play them, if you win, you get a star, and that converts into coins that you can use to buy shit in your village, which is just like a collectathon with money.
Okay.
So whatever. But the really fun one is survival mode, where you just keep going until you lose.
Hmm.
And I'm having a great time with it because I just like consistently lose all the time. I'm getting like 0 wins. Do you want to try again? 1 win. Do you want to try again?
Mm.
The most I've done so far is 3 in a row.
Okay.
And even one of those was sort of like a doesn't really count win because it was one of those games where anybody who doesn't lose wins and nobody did anything. Because everyone just wanted the free win, so just nobody played the game.
Oh, wow.
It didn't count at all. But it's interesting to see these like little in-game cultural things happen.
Right.
Like in Mario Kart, you know, people learn that like Waluigi on this specific kart with this specific tire is the best build, air quotes.
Right.
Because it's got like the best acceleration and, you know, the smallest hitbox or whatever. So watching people figure out the best way to optimize and manipulate this like online version of fucking Mario Party is great. It's the really Mario Party meta.
Yeah, I'm sure. Sure, there's a big fucking website somewhere where people are all trading those tips.
You sound super interested.
I can't even pretend. I really can't. I just like, I know Mario Party. God bless you. People, I mean, they keep making them. Somebody's playing them. Somebody's liking them. Family game. Great. Awesome. Enjoy.
My bottom line on that is like, Mario Party 2 is going to be the best forever for me.
Whoa. Okay.
But I can't guarantee that I will always have a Nintendo 64 working in my home.
Right. Here you go.
To play with a bunch of other people. So I'm happy to have something that I can actually just, you know, like fire up and play with a bunch of people and get drunk and yell. And it's a good time.
Right on. Right on. It hasn't led to any fights between you and your husband?
No, because he just loses everything.
Oh, there you go.
All the time.
Bam. Animal Crossing, staying on Nintendo. You're still playing it, Tina. John and Roy, you guys are now playing it more. Anything to update on? We talked a little bit about the bushes, I think, last episode.
Did you guys know there's new bushes? Two different colors.
I jumped in for the first time as my village was reminding me, I guess it's been 8 months, and I don't even know what I was doing 8 months ago because I wasn't playing. I probably like logged in for like 1 minute, but and then there was one or two who hadn't seen me in a year and 3 months, and they told me. So it's been
did guilt trip the hell out of you, or how did they react like, to you coming been, back?
Man? Like, and I was like, I don't know, you know, there's nothing to do. But that's the thing is like now, actually, I guess that's about the time you need to get away for there to pile up enough new things to do because it does seem there's quite a lot to mess around with now from like, and I don't even know what of this is new now or new a year ago because I haven't played, but like from, you know, being able to collect and make like food recipes and stuff. And there's the cafe and the museum and, you know, just like a whole bunch of new options with your house and how you can decorate. Ton of new apps on my phone. I think I bought like 6 or 7 new apps or something. So like I feel like all of a sudden there's a ton of stuff I don't know about the game again, which actually is probably was always the appealing point of the game, was just discovering new stuff and playing around with things. And so it's kind of interesting again. My wife got back into it. She was like hardcore into it for a while. She wanted to try it again. So she tried it and I was like, oh, that looks interesting. And I tried it too. She's like every day, like hours a day again, like back like it used to be. Like she's super into it. She couldn't wait to get out of work today. We're recording on a Thursday, which is Thanksgiving. And like, there's an event today. It's like Turkey Day. And like, in Japan, it's just Thanksgiving. And like, she was just like, 7:01 PM when I'm done with work, I'm going to be just playing Animal Crossing like all night.
Did she miss Turkey Day last year?
Probably. I don't.
Is it the same? Is it the same thing?
I'm sure it's the same thing. Yeah.
Is that why you're not playing it right now?
Now that it's been a full calendar year, like they're still doing the events, but it's the same event that you did. So like, I skipped Halloween this year because I was like, yeah, I already have all this.
So I'm not into it on that degree. Like I'm playing, you know, I think I've logged in 3 times over the last, I don't know what it's been, week basically. But, you know, it has now become a thing where like if I'm like bored with nothing to do or nothing to play or I want to unwind but I don't want to play Picross, I might like actually play it again. So,
Roy, what about you? Are you back on the horse or what?
Yeah, I kind of got back into it mostly because, similar to John, like Sarah has gotten back into it. Quite a bit. She started watching, there's these YouTubers who they're just like Animal Crossing people. All they do is post like, here's how to make, you know, a really like layered, detailed, like interesting looking part of your town. And watching that, like watching like, you know, what people can do with it when they really like are fucking into it. That's pretty fascinating. But then I load the game up and I struggled to kind of maintain that energy. Because, you know, the new stuff, I got to say, the new stuff is basically just the stuff that they didn't put in from the last game.
From the 3DS like, version, yeah.
Reconfigured. Yeah. It really feels like they took New Leaf and they were like, they took a bunch of sticky notes and they put it on a board somewhere and they wrote each feature. And then they were like, okay, we're going to give them all this, but slowly and jumble it around and like make certain things take more time. One of the things is you can get an island, or not an island, a Harv's Island. You can, like, get these shops there, but they're the same shops that just show up in your town, and you have to pay, like, 100,000 bells to get them, and you can only do one a day. It's, like, such a drip feed of, like...
You're paying for the convenience of being able to go whenever you want, but also there are a couple of shops that are new that didn't used to exist. That are going to put like Nookazon out of business. Like Nookazon is fucked.
Okay, well, how do I get
there? Go ahead.
Pardon?
I was going to say, Oh, go ahead. I was going to say, it must be a real problem with these long-running like series that have kind of had a big, not a big ultimate version, but have had like a huge, really well-received version that just had so much to it. I'm thinking we talked about Smash Brothers having this problem too. That's like when you make the next, I think Halo has this also as well. When you make the next one, if you don't have in Halo's case, you know, split screen multiplayer, you don't have Forge, you don't have, you know, everything out of the gate and it films, other old Halo things have had films. If you don't have everything out of the gate, if you don't have all those characters out of the gate, you're like doomed to just like update and update and update just to match the last one. And then, yeah, it's like, how do you top it or whatever? So it is interesting that, it's kind of a trick. Yes. Yes. Tina.
As a person who has never played in Animal Crossing before, all of this content is new to me. Like it's not stuff that I see as features that they used to have and didn't give me. And I still feel, and when I saw people saying this, I was like, you guys are just looking for things to be mad. A lot of people saying, you know, this shit should have been there from launch and it's weird that it wasn't. And now that I'm playing it, I have to kind of agree with some of the things that I'm like, this is kind of neat now, but I wish I had this, you know, a year ago. Concrete example, villagers can come and visit you at your house now. They'll like knock on the door and be like, hey, can I come in and hang out, bestie? And then when they leave, a lot of time they'll give you a little present for hanging out. And the first time that happened, Marina comes to my house, she hangs out, And then when she's leaving, she's like, oh, I have a little thank you gift. It's my favorite song. And she gives me, you know, the KK record that's always playing in her house. And I'm like, this is really cute. And I would have loved to receive this before I had already purchased every single KK song in existence, because I've had, you know, over a year to buy one every single day, you know?
Mm.
So, like, that would have been super cool. As it is now, I'm like, okay, thanks. I'm going to go sell that now. Bye.
Yeah, some of that stuff is just sort of like, it's if you play it as much as you play it, then, yeah, I think you're going to experience a little bit of that. I mean, I don't know. I get it. You know, the cafe coming back was interesting because here's like a little nerdy little thing. So the cafe in the old game, to my recollection anyway, it'd be funny if I'm like totally wrong, but it was like above ground and like had like sunlight coming in and stuff. And like, it was just like a normal, it felt like a Tokyo cafe that you might just wander into and grab a cup of coffee. The one in this one is in the basement of the museum, and it actually looks and feels like, you ever see those basement cafes, like the old school Japan style, you know, cafes that are different from like the modern ones that young people hang out with. You're more likely with the barista and the, like, you're going to have like, you know, a super old like staff and old dark brown tables and everything. It kind of feels like that. So yeah. I always wonder if that's what they were going for, but it's not different enough to like actually change. Like, if you've been there before in the last game, I went in once. I don't know that I'll go in again unless there's some reason to, but you know,
it's not in the basement though. It's on the second floor.
Is it really?
That's
well, yeah, you go upstairs to get to it. It feels like a basement.
It's indoors, basically.
It's dark.
There's no windows anywhere. This is the point. Actually, I didn't even realize that. I thought I was underground because of that. But,
John, I wanted to check in. You mentioned Dragon Quest X, the new expansion, version 6. I'm just kind of curious about what are they doing these days in that game? Like, how long has that game been going now? 10 years?
9 years now? Yeah. I mean, about as long as Final Fantasy. Final Fantasy is about to drop, you know, version 6 as well, in like a week or two. So it's kind of weird. It's kind of funny that both of these giant MMOs in Japan hit their version 6 like within a couple weeks of each other. But Dragon Quest X. So what they do is like every expansion, there's a kind of new theme and a whole new sort of area. And early on, it was just adding, like, you know, continents that you hadn't seen before. Like, one part of the world was covered by a dark thing or whatever, and it's opened up. Hey, new areas. Mm-hmm. Then they started having to get interesting with it. And so, like, for example, the previous one was the sort of demon world. So you end up going into, like, the dark half of the world, and there's a whole new thing in there to explore. And the big thing this time is the sky. So now there's, like, this whole set of lands with, like, the I forget what they called them in Dragon Quest IX, but they're basically, like, angels. It's, like, people with wings and shit. And, like, they have this whole world now up above that has never been open before. And so that's where the new one is.
You don't have to pay. Do you have to pay for the new expansion? Or is that you do? So separately, you have a subscription you have to pay every month, but then... Yep.
It's exactly like Final Fantasy XIV, which I'm sure many people are familiar with. But yeah, you pay for the expansion. You still have the monthly fee. But,
and what does the expansion cost? 30 bucks?
30, 40 bucks. I think it's probably like maybe 30. Yeah, 30 or 40.
And do they still support, like, can you still play it on like Wii U and shit?
They still support Wii U. Yeah, it's not on Wii U. Wow. But it's on Wii U. There's the cloud version on 3DS still works.
I forgot about that one.
PS5 mostly, which is just the PS4 version.
Which is the PS4 version, right.
I just like it's just the fastest, you know, running one. But know, it's just still, it's still very much my comfort food. And
are you soloing mostly when you're playing
it?
I mostly
solo it, yeah. I mean, it's a very soloable game because you can hire other people's characters to be your partner.
Right. But do you still have, are any of the friends or friends of the show, like, still play it? Like, does Andy still play it?
Andy finally gave up. No, Andy doesn't. Andy plays Final Fantasy XIV, but he doesn't play Dragon Quest X anymore. I think he got like upset at something they did, and you know, Andy, like, you don't want to get on his bad side, so they're on his list. They're on his shit list now. But you know, they added a new job class. Pirate is a new class, and they added this whole new area, and you know, a couple of like minor things to just make the gameplay experience more friendly. And so I've been just sort of casually working my way through it, taking my time with it.
I wonder if they will ever do, you know, like a Final Fantasy 14 to Final Fantasy 11, like if they will do, because they've already announced the next Dragon Quest and it's not an MMO.
Right.
But they've not hinted or given any kind of idea that they would do a new, because it has to have been such a huge success only in Japan, but to go on this long and they're still making expansions, like, you have to think, they have to be thinking about, okay, we're going to do the next one and we're going to do it, you know, worldwide, international.
I've thought about that, and that, yeah, that may be a thing, but I think if they're going to do that, they probably still feel that they have to get the main series. I mean, it's certainly grown in popularity, but it's still not a mega hit. It's not like Final Fantasy level in the West, so maybe they need to get it to that level before they attempt that. I think, like, if anything, I could see them just giving it a graphical overhaul. Like, the newer areas obviously look a lot nicer. They've just from techniques they've learned. It's not like the engine has gotten different, right, from 8 years ago, but they do a lot more with what they have, and so things look a lot better now. But I could see them giving the entire game an overhaul, and like maybe like it's no longer playable on the older platform, so you need to have a newer platform and it looks nicer. But I can't really see them making a totally new MMO because this one is still going strong, and it doesn't exactly like require, you know, high end performance machines to run anyway. You know, it's Dragon Quest. It's a game that, you know, kind of looks good even on 3DS. So
Yeah,
but, you know, I'm having a good time with it, but I'm ready to get, I'm also playing Final Fantasy 14, you know, trying to catch up. I'm not going to catch up in time for Endwalker, but I'm close, and I'm really excited about that. I know Roy, I kind of wanted to ask you, not to take over this, but you had mentioned that you were like getting ready for the new final prep before Endwalker, but what does that mean exactly? What are you doing?
Well, the big thing for me, two things. It's kind of funny because I think Mark, you joked about this at the beginning, like, how something about I was moving, but Final Fantasy 14, yada, yada. But a lot of it is like clearing out my inventory, because once you start a new game, like they're just giving stuff to you, you know, like every quest, they're like, here's an omelet, here's some new armor. So like trying to just clean out all my retainers inventory, because they're like really full, boring stuff, but like selling it, desynthesizing it, combining it, etc. Also, the other thing is like there's going to be a stat crunch where it's like right now the ceiling for how strong you can be, they're going to lower that essentially, because I guess numbers were just so high that it was starting to affect performance. So essentially all the good gear that there is now is going to get weaker as soon as the game launches. So there's some content that you can do unsynced, meaning like I could go into a level 60 dungeon with like my item level 500 gear and just steamroll through it. And that's really good for some of the like end game glowy weapon quests. Like there's like these, they're really just for glamours, like just for like looking cool. There's some weapons that I've been wanting to get. So I had like a checklist that I was going through just to get them out of the way. I just finished my last one yesterday. So
did you have like a literal checklist? Like you wrote down a bunch of ones that you wanted to get and you were kind of going through, like crossing them off.
It's more of a mental checklist, really.
I see.
When does the next, is it Endwalker? When does that launch?
Early access is, I think December 4th or something like that. December 4th in Japan, December 3rd in the West, I think.
What's the difference between,
if you ordered it, you can play it like a few days earlier than people who didn't.
So right before the Christmas holidays, basically, people can just fucking disgorge for 2 weeks that everybody gets off.
They give you – it's really smart, too. They give you, like, an item if you pre-order. I mean, among other items, one of the items helps you get experience faster up until level 80, which is kind of the cap that you would have gotten at before this anyway. So, like, if you're like me, who is – I'm, like, 73 or something like that.
They got to get you up.
It helps me to get there faster, which is a great incentive. So I, of course, bought it.
Right on. All right, cool. I think that we should wrap up our MMO talk, our bi-weekly MMO talk there.
I want to have a whole podcast where we just talk about Final Fantasy 14 sometime, get on some other Final Fantasy 14 friends.
We could do that next podcast, and I'll just I'll see you guys in a month.
Well, no, they could do it, and then we could just like troll them the whole time and ruin it for every single person involved except ourselves.
Nerds! We'll just say that like every few minutes, like,
nerds,
you like to dress up like a lady in the game, huh? Oh, I don't know. I don't know. I think that would last maybe 10 minutes. We'd have a good fun 10 minutes with it, though. Why don't we call it there and go into the news? Gabe, if you're with us, barf twice and play the news theme song.
News. News. News.
Let's see, we're going to have kind of like a News Express this time.
The people want that. I saw a lot of feedback.
Oh, okay.
Thank you, by the way, everybody who did send feedback and responded to my call. I had tons and tons of messages.
Yeah, give us a summary of the themes that you mentioned, that you noticed in our feedback overall.
Summary, I think a surprising number of people love us just the way we are. Which is like, I don't even love us just the way we are. So I was surprised to hear that. It's like a lot of people are just cool with everything kind of as it is. Don't change. And, you know, a lot of really nice messages that were, you know, just, you know, reminded me, I guess, of, you know, yeah, there are
why we do it
on the other end and why we do it. Exactly. And so, yeah. But I did see a few, like, you know, less news, like hit the big bits and don't worry about covering everything because it's more interesting to a lot of people just to kind of hear what we have to say about stuff than it is to actually get the news itself. So it's like,
right.
As long as we're talking about something we're interested in, it seems like that's cool. And I'm all for that too, because a lot of the news bores me, not our news. I just mean the news in general out there.
Yeah. By the time we're talking about it, usually you've heard about it. People have discussed it, chewed it over, gone back and forth, and we're just almost kind of like summarizing it. So, yeah, I think we're going to chime in more on the stuff that we're either personally passionate about or Japan-centric stuff that we might have a perspective that is not coming from other places. So anything else? Any other
Well, I should have prepared
consensus opinions.
No, but I mean, you know, again, like just a whole lot of there's a whole lot of warm, positive messages. Maybe we could read some off next time or something.
Thank you for everybody who wrote in again.
I'm not kidding when I say there was probably over 100 messages and I was blown away. And I thought I was telling you, Mark, before the show, but it was just cute seeing some people like who really don't use Twitter and just lurk and were just like sending me DMs. Like I got more than one of these where it's like, I think I'm doing this right. I'm not sure, but I just wanted to let you know I listened to the podcast and I don't.
My VCR is flashing 12. What did I do?
It was really nice. So we super appreciate it. And
absolutely.
Good way to start off season two.
That's right. Season two, people. So let's see. Playdate delayed to 2022. Our friends over at Panic, going through some crazy, crazy shit trying to get that thing together. I thought we talked about this last time. Hardware is tough. Yeah. So Gabe, smack yourself one more time for us. Grand Theft
Auto. Wait, I don't think we talked about it. I think we talked about it in chat. I think this happened after the last episode.
I remember saying hardware is really hard. I thought it was
in regards
to this. But
oh my god, yeah, Mark. But wait, okay. So what I was going to say to this is, somebody look it up and just tell us. Did we talk about it last time? But speaking of looking things up, we also got I got several messages.
Oh yes,
telling us about the origins of the infamous Doritoing.
And, yes, very satisfying. Right
now, but it was like it was a specific episode. It was a long ass time ago. It was like in the early
2012,
days.
I think.
That's right. And it was in reference to the, as we suspected, it was in reference to the whole
the Keeley Mountain Dew Dorito incident, the Dorito Pope incident. Yeah. And it was, I had accidentally said, I don't know, something Dorito it. And then we noticed it and I was like, oh yeah, it's the new thing. It's like Bing or whatever. It's
November 2012
search engine. The Dorito.
And in the next
search
episode,
engine.
You jokingly were like, what was it? Pringle it, Dorito it. And that's how close we were to having it be Pringle it.
Could have been Pringle it. Sorry, Pringles.
Could have been Pringle it.
Sorry. If you were quicker on the social media draw, you would have gotten to me first. And that was cool. Thank you very much.
Who called that out. Yeah, there was people on Twitter and there were people on Resetera who did the work and found it for us. And so cheers to you guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll send you a bag of Doritos or something.
Special shout outs to super fan JR Wraith who hunted that down and put it up on YouTube. A couple of people had noticed it, but he went the extra mile.
Oh,
he
nice,
Doritoed
nice.
It to figure it out too, which I thought was extra appropriate. So, Playdate is coming in 2022. They're shipping as they get them. It's crazy what they had to go through. You should read their whole blog post. But yeah, they're like doing every possible thing they can. Hardware is freaking a total fucking hideous, terrible bitch. Terrible, terrible pain in the ass, needless to say. But still excited for that. Just going to have to be excited a little longer. Waiting for it. GTA has like taken the GTA trilogy remaster. What is it called though? The Definitive Edition has kind of taken Cyberpunk's throne as the like gifable like whipping boy for the internet. It just seems like it's shipped in a pretty rough state, maybe including some of the hot coffee stuff, which is getting them into, well, that might get them into like legal problems and stuff. It just, yeah, it's a unfortunate thing kind of all around, unless like me, you're just kind of sitting on the sidelines, like enjoying the different like hot dog finger gifts and the car that gets bigger. Although that was apparently a bug in the original GTA 3, the car that gets bigger as you
like, wiggle
and it physically gets larger. A lot of crazy funny bugs. Xbox celebrated 20th anniversary.
Yeah.
In some cool ways. One of which, of course, Halo multiplayer launched a little bit early in beta. Another 76 backwards compatible games were announced with enhancements, including 50 Cent Blood in the Sand, I think was the one that people were the most excited about. Either that or it's a number, so it's first on the list. but yeah, some Dead or Alive games, some Fear games, Gladius, which I just like saying, Gladius.
Near.
Gun Valkyrie.
The Dabnir is in there too.
Oh, that near. Okay.
Dabnir with the, yeah, which is the, you know, the remake was the remake with the brother, the original version with the father.
Brother!
Not only got added, but got the, what is it they call it, FPS boost, which
there
I
you go, yeah.
See how that feels, but yeah.
The Atogi games, Atogi 1 and 2, Time Pilot. What the hell is Time Pilot doing in there? That's weird. Time Splitters, Viva Pinata Party Animals, Warlords, some Star Wars games. Yeah, just a lot of crazy stuff. Max Payne games, Manhunt. Yeah,
Ridge Racer 6.
Good on them. Good on them. There you go. I don't like that game.
Classic game. You don't like Ridge Racer 6?
I don't like that game. No.
Why not?
It's what? Just, eh.
No, it's not. It's good. It's Ridge Racer.
R4, it kind of, Ridge Racer ended with R4, as far as I'm concerned. Those were really good, relevant games.
And six then and they seven just, are good. Six and seven are good.
Maybe the PSP one? The PSP one was maybe the last one that,
six that I was interested in. Seven are both interested really in. Solid. You should try them. Now that they're backwards compatible. Again, they're done, too. They said no more backwards compatible games. This is it.
It's over. Oh, they did? Oh, yes. I did not catch that. Whoa.
This is the, there's no longer, I forget, wow. I don't have the quote, so I'm not going to make up a quote for them, but it was something like, there's nothing else we can do. Like, we've done, we
did Blood in the Sand, people, for God's fucking sake. 50 Cent Blood in the Sand, people. This is how scraping the barrel we are down to now. Yeah. Let's see.
Did you try did anybody here try the Xbox, I forget what they call it, My Xbox History? Which is a thing that you can do if you go to.
I did not do it, but I saw you do it. I saw a lot of people do it. Your most played game, Tales of Vesperia.
Yeah, yeah. Which
that yeah, I guess is interesting.
Probably just because it's a very long game, and I finished it. But I mean, you know, it was interesting because it had a lot of other stats too, like down to like, you know, your first day you played Xbox Live, your rarest achievements. It's got a whole bunch of cool info. How many games you played? It was like mine was in the 200s. It wasn't super high, but also like how much, you know, it's crazy how much my game playing went down after Xbox 360. Like I barely
touched
Xbox One.
I was looking at everyone else.
This week's Famitsu, speaking of Japan news, has a 20th anniversary feature about the Xbox, and the sales figures in Japan, man, were like, so the Xbox 360 did like the best-selling Xbox 360 game, Star Ocean 4, sold 208,000 copies in Japan, which, you know, for an Xbox is, that's a lot of copies.
Respectable.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
The best-selling Xbox One game in Japan is Titanfall, and it sold 43,000 copies. And number two is like Kinect Sports Rivals at 25,000 copies. And the overall hardware was almost cut in half. Like right now, after it was Xbox came out last year, right? The new one. In one year, literally in one year, Xbox Series X has outsold Xbox One in Japan hardware all time. Yeah. Like in one year, the entire life cycle of Xbox One has been passed. So it was just a bad generation, man.
They can't keep a same as PS5s here. They can't keep them or say and same as Xbox Series everywhere. They can't keep them on the shelves here. So they're selling them as fast as they can get them here. Nobody knows what the demand for it is here. Now it is certainly higher than it was for one. Xbox One, like certain games didn't even come out here or like weren't localized. And like, I think
they gave up. Even they just basically gave up.
They completely did. They completely did. Even like major retailers didn't have a section for it. And it was a total surrender. And it was, you know, what they realized at the 360 time. It was like, okay, well, we tried, we spent all that money. And it didn't move the needle enough. Guess what? We're going to double down on all these like Skyrim and like the Western RPGs and all of those games. And like, just, we can't win in Japan. So we're just going to kind of give up. They've since kind of course corrected on that. And I think come back to a much more like pendulum, not swinging all the way one way or the other. But it remains to be seen like where they really are, because nobody knows. They can't keep them on the shelves and, how much of a priority are they going to be making?
I think it's fair to say it was a big mistake. Like them giving up on Japan on the Xbox One gen. I mean, granted, what's his face?
I mean, honestly, the Xbox One, they just fucking should have just given up on it in general. Like, yeah, well, I mean, anywhere
Zynga,
in the world.
Zynga guy almost ruined the whole Xbox brand. But I mean, you know, Don Matrick or whatever his name is. But like, you know, they should have kept it going because they actually did something that's really hard to do, which is they slowly built up a bit here. They had that thing that is so hard to get. It wasn't huge. It wasn't like Microsoft huge for like what they're used to with their other products. But like for Japan, I mean, looking at the Xbox 360's top 10 like best-selling games in that generation in Japan, you've got like Star Ocean 4, Tales of Vesperia, Blue Dragon, Last Remnant. You've got Biohazard 5. You've got all these like big Japanese titles, some of which they funded to make happen. It's just a shame that they gave up.
It is it's one of those tough things because I think that they did some of the early, they did definitely prioritize it. People have talked about this now, people like Ed Fries and stuff, where they were like, oh, you have to prioritize Japan. And they spent a lot of time and money trying to break in Japan. And what I think they didn't realize is that you're doomed to fail no matter what you do, no matter if you do everything right, however much money you spend. Some people are going to put stuff out. Yeah, like Sega is going to take your money and give you some games. Nobody's going to give you like the crown jewels at first. You're going to have to be there 10 years, 12 years, 15 years.
Yep.
And then if you're there the whole time, they'll be like, oh, really? You're not going to cut and run? You're actually like going to be around for a while? I've seen the same people's faces for that long. Like, then that is where you finally can, I think, make real inroads.
And that stuff pays off worldwide because like those games, yeah, maybe they're going to tank here. But like you said, Sega takes that money and then that stuff that they make is potentially going to do something in the West. And I mean, Lost Odyssey is still one of the most talked about backwards compatible games. It was a game that Microsoft funded to be made in Japan. Guess how much Halo 5 sold in Japan?
Halo 5. Oof, that's going to be low. I know it's lower than 23,000 because of what you just said, that which is crazy.
Damn it. I blew
but,
it. Yeah.
But what, 15?
10,640 copies.
That is insane. Wow. Yeah. I mean, and of course that's physical, but still like that's fucking bonkers. Also bonkers, Sonic the Hedgehog coming to Monster Hunter Rise. Roy, how excited on a scale of 1 to Tails are you on this announcement?
Tails, Tails is very excited. Like, that's one of the things that, like, was kind of a slight disappointment with Rise is that so many of the updates were like, here's some cosmetics to make your characters look ugly as shit. That's, like, a nod to a game that I don't care about. So, not excited.
Sonic does look like a dude in a Sonic suit, to be fair. I don't know how you would do it otherwise, but yeah, it kind of, well, yeah.
This is that stage of like a popular thing, though, where like, you know, something that you held dear for so long that no one else like listened to you about or believed you on, but you were like the champion, and then it like becomes like the popular kid at school, and suddenly like everybody's, it's like whoring itself out to everyone, and it's got fucking Sonic costumes in it, and it's like, it feels a little sad.
You used to be cool, man. You used to be all about the gaming. Now you're all about the money. Wait, dial it back. You used to be all about hunting monsters. Now you're about hunting that bag.
Basically.
Wow, that was a really lukewarm reception to what I thought was a pretty solid joke.
Multiverses. Sorry, I'm just focusing on the next headline and how we're getting to it. I'm not listening to what anybody says. I'm just shooting up the next. Multiverses. Did you guys see this? Bugs Bunny, Batman, and Game of Thrones characters, which I guess WB owns that as well. It's kind of a very mishmashy crossover thing, but Tom and Jerry, Arya Stark, Scooby-Doo. A multiverse is not a bad name for this kind of thing. It is very much Smash Brothers. Many people have tried. No one else has been able to do it. PlayStation All-Stars probably being the highest profile example. I guess Ubisoft has some kind of indie game, Brawlhalla or something that's sort of like it. But Nickelodeon All-Star Brawl. There's another one. So free to play, 2v2, PS4, PS5, PC, Xbox One, Series X, rollback netcode, they're saying the right things, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, I mean, how could you not be there day one? Steven Universe, and I guess this is just the start, they're going to be releasing characters all the time. I don't know. Interesting to see other people take a stab at the Smash Brothers formula, but be very curious to see if they can succeed.
It's hard to imagine this would be super anything.
Who wants to be like I don't know. Tom from Tom and Jerry and shit? It's like
kids, apparently. I don't know. Pragmata. A Capcom game that I forgot existed announced. I think it was just like a sizzle trailer. It's the only thing that they've showed. Barefoot girl who wears a blue puffy parka and lives on the moon. And no, it's not a Kojima game, which is pointed out by, I believe this is Polygon, which I thought was it definitely looks like it could be a Kojima game. Delayed to 2023.
So that was that game that was in the first like PlayStation thing, right? Where they like had their big summer.
Is that where it was? Okay.
Yeah. They showed it and it looked interesting and cool, but it was just, it was brief and it just disappeared after that.
Very mysterious. Still mysterious. Mysterious a little longer. The GTA thing we mentioned earlier, Rockstar apologized for it, said like, this is not up to our snuff. We're going to do better. We're going to fix it. We're going to do all that stuff. Blah, 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 blah. Speaking of Kojima, they opened a LA studio focused on TV, film, and music. So, yeah. With an ex PlayStation executive at the helm. So that's very interesting. As long as Kojima has been seemingly obsessed with making a movie, who knows now what could be born out of that. He started tweeting also recently. I don't know if this is in news, but there was some pictures from what looked like a set, and people were like, you know, doing the internet thing and the internet sleuthing it apart and being like, is this the guy in the boots, Norman Reedus? And like, what would this be? And da 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 da. With the Game Awards coming up, I wonder if something's going to get announced there or maybe tease something. Who knows? Let's see, Harmonix. Our friends over at Harmonix, bought by Epic Games. So, and they're going to work on, surprise, surprise, Fortnite stuff, at least short term. So, like music experiences. This actually totally makes sense. You know, they've done those events with Travis Scott and Ariana Grande, Ariola Grande. And so it totally makes sense now. For they haven't had a, I guess actually Fuser, I did hear about their most recent game, Fuser, where you're basically a DJ mixing songs, and it sounded really cool. I think it was fairly popular as well. But like, this is another big merger acquisition. Yeah, I mean, kind of crazy that Harmonix, I mean, they were kings of the fucking world for a while there, with Rock Band.
Remember that time you like totally slammed one of their games on the podcast, and then like a week later we were like at the same table as the director at E3?
No, really?
Like, yeah, I think, I mean, he didn't recognize it, you, or he pretended he didn't, at least, so it all
was. Oh, really?
Was that what was it?
Was it Fantasia?
Yeah.
I like, wonder if it would, it probably would have been Fantasia.
Podcast, and then like, literally like a couple of weeks later, like they were getting introduced to people at like after drinks the place, and it's like the guy who made the game like literally two seats away. I was like, oh man. But yeah,
it happens.
We got away from that one.
It happens sometimes. Shouts out to that guy. Hopefully he got a bunch of money from this buyout. Game Awards 2021, which we were just talking about, the Keeleys, December 9th. There are going to be people there in person this year. And should we do the awards? Do we want to do predictions? Do we want to just kind of gloss over some of the bigger categories? Let's just, okay, here. Game of the Year. Deathloop, It Takes Two, Metroid Dread, Psychonauts 2, Ratchet Clank, Rift Apart, Resident Evil Village. A lot of those games...
How do these get chosen? Is it like a group of people come together?
It's all very shadowy and mysterious. There's like a voting pool of international outlets and stuff, and then fans also. Oh, you mean on the nominations?
Yeah.
Or you mean on the winners? Oh, okay.
Oh no, well, I mean on the nominations. Like, where does that come from?
I believe actually nominations is the same as the winners, in that it's like there's like this advisory pool, which includes even like Famitsu from Japan is in it. The territories are all represented, and then all of kind of like the movers and shakers in the industry. I think they have a listing on their website. At least they used to. They just pool people. They ask them for their top whatever number of picks, and they do that. But I think then there's like a finger on the scale. I think that there's like an X factor that they still like do some editorial oversight. And I think that's the same thing with the winners. Like users quote unquote vote on the winners, but also it's not like a pure mathematical formula, and it's not a pure democracy or a pure vote like the Academy Awards is or anything like that.
It feels very I don't know, like AAA leaning to me, to a degree where it's like, did you really play everything that came out? Or maybe it's not meant to be covering everything, and you know, like, well, I feel like
it does the weird thing. It does the weird thing where there's like, I think there's like an indie game of the year as a separate category. And it's like, there's arguments to be made on both sides of that, right? It's like, okay, you're giving recognitions to games that otherwise might get crowded out by the AAAs. But also, like, if the indie game really was the best game of the year, and you could argue that some of these actually even this year belong in that main game of the year category, that
Playing field feels a little bit like it's not balanced to me. And you know, I mean, it's normal. Everybody's going to be like, some things are going to be questionable. I'm always complaining about how some of the categories are weird, like, you know, but
right.
In general.
Yeah. Like, there's no way to do something like this perfect. There's no way to do something like this perfect, but like, yeah, I have a bone to pick with just like that. It's not totally transparent on how the winners are chosen. Mm. Like if I had to pick something, it would be that, but,
were just describing about, like, you know, indie games have their own category, but then why are they also excluded from the other categories and stuff? That's something that the Oscars have been dealing with for the last like 15 or 20 years in a big way, right? You know, why do kids movies have their own categories? If a kid's movie was the best movie of the year, it should also be up for best picture of the year if it was, you know?
Sometimes they are. Like, occasionally something will break through, like foreign movie with what's it called?
Parasite?
That won. Yeah, with Parasite that won. And also, I think Goose Game won the Game Award for 2019, which was like in indie. So I think it's not that it's impossible, but I think it makes it easier to like relegate them. You could say that. But anyway, so
my big a lot bitch of those about games, it is that they don't seem to actually really care about what the categories are. They've just picked a couple guys and they're just going to throw them all in there. Like, you can't tell me, no matter how good your game was, you can't tell me you had the best lighting and the best sound design and the best narrative and the best music and the best, you know, like, it just doesn't, I don't believe you.
Well, it's a popularity contest to a certain degree, right? Like, you're going to have the games that are front of mind. Also, like any award show, it definitely favors games that are, in general, that are released in the fall, like towards the end of the year, just because they're fresh in everybody's heads. Those are the games that people are thinking of.
Yeah.
I'm kind of surprised to see Resident Evil Village. I mean, I think it was a light, it was a soft year for AAA games. And so I'm surprised to see Resident Evil Village in here. I would not expect Metroid Dread. I think it's a good game. I would not expect it to be in a Game of the Year conversation. It just didn't seem to like really break out and surprise.
I agree. I guess I loved it to that degree. But it wasn't. Yeah. We get into that conversation, but it wasn't what I would call like Game of the Year worthy, you know?
But, right. Yeah. And everybody has their own different thing of what that means. But, and the same thing with all these categories, like game direction, as opposed to, well, yeah. Anyway,
I really love Psychonauts 2. Maybe I should play it. I don't know. It's got nominated for like everything. I don't know if
Psychonauts 2 is in here. Psychonauts 2 is in here a lot. Deathloop is in here a ton.
That I kind of get. We talked about that a ton this year.
Yeah,
I feel like Returnal isn't nearly as present as I thought it was going to be.
I would agree, actually. So Returnal is in game direction, but like, you could argue that belongs in Game of the Year, like in terms of kind of coming out and surprising people. I think that they shot themselves in the foot with that save mechanism and then how long it took to fix that. But yeah, It Takes Two, that guy is kind of a darling of the Game Awards, but he's appearing in here a bunch. That game did very, very well. It also reviewed very, very well. So, Back for Blood is in there in multiplayer.
I was stoked to see Chicory was nominated for one in like games for, you know,
games for impact or something.
Yeah, where it's like a nice narrative for society.
Like, yeah, games for impact. So before that's your nice, eyes,
but also like it's Dungeon. Just a fucking good game, you guys. Like,
yeah, Chicory, Life is Strange, No Longer Home, Best Indie, Death's Door, Kena, Bridge of Spirits, Inscription, which I'm hearing crazy good things about. I don't know if I really want to check that one out. Roy, have you heard about that at all? I think you might. It might be kind of up your alley. It's like a card game, but it's got a lot of weird, cool elements to it that I almost don't want to like say anything more about to spoil. Loop Hero in 12 minutes. Three of these are Devolver games, actually, which is impressive. Those guys are.
Well, 12 Minutes was Annapurna, right?
And 12 Minutes was Annapurna, yeah.
Did you check that out? Did anybody check that out?
So I watched a long play of it, and I'm really glad I didn't give it any more time than that.
Huh. I kind of want to know what the thing that everybody is really upset about is in it almost more than
Everyone upset about something?
That's kind of the approach that I took as well. I just wanted to know what the big twist was. And as soon as I found out what it was, I was like, I'm real glad I didn't invest more than like 20 minutes.
People are not happy about
really?
That.
I need
whatever
to go
dig
that up then. Yeah. And we swapped it to Japanese for like 5 minutes and swapped it right back because the Japanese is terrible. It's like Google Translate.
Oh, you started playing it?
Oh, Noah finished it. Yeah, I watched her play through it.
Oh, okay.
So I was just.
Oh, the Japanese was super bad?
Oh, it was bad. Yeah, it was just really
dope.
Bad. That happens a lot in the games.
Let's see. Yeah, there's some cyberpunk in here. There, Artful Escape got into Best Art Direction. So speaking of an indie, lots and lots of Deathloop, Sable, Best Debut Indie Game. So Kena, Sable, Artful Escape, Forgotten City, Valheim.
Ugh, this role-playing category really upsets me because, like, for God's sake, Monster Hunter Rise is not a role-playing game. And, like, this constantly happens. Like,
would you put it in an adventure game, I guess? Like, action
I don't
adventure?
Know what I would put it in. Action adventure, maybe, yeah, but, like, or potentially. I'm not saying for sure, but I would not put it in a role-playing game when you've got games. I mean, I'm glad SMT5 got in there and Tales of Arise got in there. Cyberpunk's in there. Those are, you know, games that I would say belong in an RPG category. Monster Hunter Rise is as much of an RPG as Mario Odyssey is an RPG, as in it's not. So, you know, it's a bummer, but
it's not. Come on. Before. I mean, you have a stats, you have a character, you play with other people.
Well, hang on. Nobody. Now we're getting into the real hairy business of what action. Is an RPG, because if you look at the words role playing game, you are playing a role and you are not fucking doing that in Monster Hunter. You are a blank slate person who just gets excited about meat and goes and murders shit.
It's very much action heavy, like, you know, multiplayer focused. It's not a role playing game. It's
but
much
an MMORPG, you're playing your own character. You're playing a role. Mm-hmm. No, what? How? No, you're playing the same way you're playing in Monster Hunter, an MMORPG.
Oh, okay, big Peter disagree. Gross, big disagree. RPG.
I'm playing the role of a puzzle player, and I want that in the best role playing game category next year.
Yeah. you could argue the one that I think that we used to get into arguments about at EGM is like the difference between adventure, like the lines between action and the line between adventure and the line between RPG. It's just, you have to take it on a game by game basis. It's not worth getting upset about.
There's a lot of conversation about that in recent years too, because sometimes, as it turned out, the definition of a genre in like Japan is slightly different from the definition in America, right? Like in the West, you would call Zelda, and some people would call Zelda an adventure game or an action adventure game. In Japan, an adventure game is a very different type of thing. Or like, you know, what is it? The visual novels, right? Like people are calling games visual novels in the West that are not actually visual novels, but it's just sort of that term has been adopted for a slightly similar but different game. So yeah, it gets convoluted, and I know, but I just don't like seeing Monster Hunter in a category that, you know, is already underrepresented. I want to see more actual RPGs up there.
Mm. Yep. Well, we'll see. Tune in on September 9th. Glad to see RE4 VR getting nominated for best AR VR game. I don't know why they say there's no AR games, people. Like, you're just assuming, like, you have to say AR now when you say VR. Yeah, there's no AR games worth of shit at all.
How is Jake's game not in there, by the way? Like, Song in the Smoke was like, robbed. All the VR sites. Okay, robbed. Maybe we're biased because he's our pal, but like a bunch of VR sites were drooling over that game.
Let's see. I did not see this part, so I'm really curious if you guys had that. Microsoft, as part of their 20th anniversary celebration, they published a 1990 letter from their failed attempt to buy Nintendo.
Saw that, yeah.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. And it's the only catch of Nintendo, quote, laughed their asses off, unquote.
Did you try to read it? Did you look at the letter?
No, I'm dying. I'm going to go look at it right now. Yeah.
The middle of it is covered up. You can't see the middle, but the...
Oh, they redacted it? End.
I don't think so. Well, maybe they did that on purpose, but they conveniently, you know, placed part of the design right over the middle of the letter. But you can see that who they were meeting with, like they were meeting with Yamauchi and I think it was Yokota, maybe, and or no, not Yokota,
right?
I forget who, but basically, like, you know, they were
Takeda.
They were trying to. Yamauchi. I remember too, like we had heard about that back in the day. That was like one of those things that was going around about them trying to.
Yeah,
and everybody was like, that's never going to happen." But I don't think. I don't remember, honestly. I really don't remember. Did people realize that it had gotten this far along that they actually went to Nintendo and had a meeting to talk about it? But
I would love to see. Yeah, so Yamauchi was there.
Yamauchi
Takeda.
Takeda, right.
Yeah. I would love to have seen the reaction from Yamauchi. I'm sure it was.
Imagine an alternate reality where that actually happened. Like, would we have gotten Zelda first-person shooters, or would we have gotten Halo kart racing?
Yeah, the bad thing is, I mean, Nintendo just probably wouldn't exist right now, or would have, like, rebought their independence, because Microsoft, they're different now, but back then, they were, like, amazing at buying things and then just fucking them up, or, like, just running them into the ground, basically, or, like, trying to like change them, putting their fingers in, having like a bunch of vice presidents give notes and stuff. Like, by all accounts, as it is, they've learned their lesson.
Can't blame them for trying though, too, right? I mean, like if I were them, anyone.
Oh no, hell yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, I would fucking lose it. Yeah, like yeah. There was a lot of those rumors around then too, or that Microsoft was going to buy Sega was like a real persistent one.
And that was
you still hear it every once in a while.
Yeah.
I mean, I've heard that one as recently as like a few years ago. Back when people when Microsoft was dropping big hints that they wanted to get some Japanese acquisitions. I think that's going to do it for news. Why don't we wrap up with a few reader questions, listener questions,
queries from the public.
Yes, thank you for everyone who sent in. These are some ones left over from the last time that we asked for the 300th episode, but still relevant. Things like this question from Limes Lime Time, hacker alias Limes Lime Time, aka Sam Burton. I've been struggling to sleep without knowing which is the best combini egg sandwich and why it's 7-Eleven, he adds, which is actually the correct answer. Does anyone want to challenge that, or should we just move on?
Well, specifically 7-Eleven Funwari Kope Tamago, which I've never eaten, so I don't know if
that's just their egg sandwich. That's just what they call it.
Kope Tamago implies that it's on a kopepan, which is like a roll, not sliced bread, right?
Wait, what? Okay, I'm going to have to Google
if
this.
If that's the case, I need to hard disagree.
False. Yes, hard I'm going to have to as well. Do a Google image search on this
It's absolutely incorrect.
Yes.
Yeah, hard
this is
disagree.
On some fucking freak of nature. Yeah, this is.
I don't think I would eat that. I don't know.
Oh, no, I wouldn't eat it. It's not the superior sandwich. Egg salad belongs on sliced white bread.
I would get some, like, mozzarella and, like, you know, put it on top, maybe a little bit of pepper or some kind of spices, toast it. I think I can see that.
Toasted egg salad?
You're not going to do all this? What are you talking about? You're going to just eat this outside the 7-Eleven?
No. I'm saying what I would do to make it like something I would actually seek out.
Toasted egg salad. You're going to warm mayonnaise.
Dude, it's a bun. I mean, you got to have... You can't
Wait, just... are you taking the egg salad sandwich and putting mozzarella on?
I'm looking at the Funwari Kope Tamago salad sandwich right now, and I'm saying what I would do to it to make it... Yes.
No, warming up mayonnaise is a hard fucking no from me, my guy. Absolutely
correct.
Oh, it's, what is the best convenient egg sandwich? I see.
Yeah. So I say this without. I feel like maybe we should eat the sandwich before we say so definitively. But I feel like I can say this without having ever eaten the sandwich. Is that I cannot imagine. 7-Eleven does have the best egg salad sandwich, which is like a legitimate, like, you know, it does not taste like an egg salad sandwich that you would buy in a store anywhere else. Like, I would not normally want to eat an egg salad, a store-bought egg salad sandwich, especially a convenience store, but it is very good. It's like one of my go-tos because it's kind of vaguely
Oh, is it? I was just going to say, when is the last time you had one? And I thought you were going to say like years ago, but you actually eat these.
Oh, no. It sells out. This is one of the first sandwiches that will be gone like after the lunch rush or after the dinner rush. And there will just be like the half and half one egg salad and one shitty ham and like lettuce abomination that they do. No, this is like one of my go-to. If I have to eat a combini lunch, it will be this. It will be not this one, but it will be the egg salad sandwich. It will be a thing of milk, and it will be a like one of the like protein bars, which is like a weird like wafer thing. It's not really like a protein bar in the Western sense, but it's like kind of vaguely almost healthy.
Okay.
My go-to combini sandwich is the one that's the three in the package, so they're all a bit smaller, but you get the variety.
The one that Mark just said was terrible.
Yeah, there's the egg salad, and then the tuna salad, and then the ham and cheese and lettuce one, which I save for last because it's my favorite.
See, I can't shift gears. Are you a big buffet person? This is also a reason I don't like the buffet is because I can't have a little of everything on the plate. I can't shift gears that many times. I have to focus and enjoy one thing, and I get... grossed out if, like, seeing people at the buffets, which are big things in hotels here. You go to an onsen, people are like, oh, fuck yeah, I'm going to get a tiny 2-inch square thing of 30 different things. It just, like, makes me ill. I'll, like, pick 4 things that look really good and focus in on them. But are you more like a sampler platter?
I'm all about that variety life. I hate going home for a visit and ordering dinner, and it's just a giant plate of a single kind of pasta. I'm like, this is more pasta than I need in, like, a week.
Right.
And it's all the same flavor. I want to have multiple small dishes.
You want the tour of Italy, is what you're saying, from Olive Garden.
That's what you're saying.
That's your ideal meal, is the tour of Italy. Anybody else on their go-to combini?
I don't really eat them.
Pick up? No. Roy?
Boy, you look like you were going to call one.
Yeah. I have, okay, so I know that you're Team 7, but Family Mart makes a really good baguette ham and cheese sandwich.
Oh,
really? Okay.
I know the one you're talking about. It's on, like, that kind of crusty bread that actually has, like, character.
It has substantial kind of bread. That one, whenever I eat that, I like dream of, like, maybe someday I'll get to go to France and eat a real baguette.
I need to check John, it out. Nothing? Really? 7-Eleven also.
Sandwich guy, yeah.
Well, not it doesn't have to be sandwich. Just whatever your combini go-to would be.
Combini go-to is probably, man, I think, you know, back in the day when we were, like, working, like, late, we would get, like, that 7-Eleven pasta, the spaghetti, the meat sauce spaghetti.
The meat sauce.
It's pretty good.
For the
but
best.
I've called that out on the show before. So combini pasta. I don't have a new one. I'm not, I've gotten so, because of the pandemic, I've gotten so hooked on ordering Uber. Hooked is maybe a bad word. It's more like it's partly necessity, partly laziness evolving into, like, okay, actually this is extremely convenient. I just get Uber, like, all the time now. And I can't even say I have a go-to. I get, like, a different thing every time. There's so much stuff around if you're in, like, central Tokyo, so I never run out of stuff to eat. So convenient food has not been a thing for quite a while now.
Okay. Let's see. Next question. Speaking of the pandemic, from hacker alias Zero Outer Limits, Gavin Fitzgerald, how are you holding up in this stage of the pandemic? And then, as can maybe part of that, favorite horror book, movie, show, and or game, favorite dish to cook at home?
Right there to...
How are we holding up? Things starting to go out. The numbers are, like, single digits now in Tokyo, and so I still feel a little weird doing it, but, like, I had a lunch with the 2 people today. I'm going to a lunch tomorrow. Like, things that's kind of starting to see people.
I went to karaoke last weekend for the first
time.
In, you know, almost 2 years. And it was a cleansing experience. It was also
cathartic, I bet.
Devastating how quickly I lost my voice. And how much my range just sucks ass now.
Diminished.
There's notes. Muscle. There are notes that used to be easy that I
showers for. You
was
practice.
Struggling to hit, and I was not happy about it.
Were you with a group? Were you with your husband? Were you doing
big old group of three? So nice little
right on.
Chill time. And one of the people that we went with, it was their first time ever going to karaoke in Japan.
Whoa. Wow. Yeah. Okay.
So that was like, that's always a really.
You're not talking about our Sammy, are you? Or...
Yeah.
That was her first time?
That was her first time, and she was so good. She was so good.
She must live in Japan, right? Because there's still no getting in or out.
She
kind
of moved here, like, in the beginning of the pandemic, so it didn't.
Oh,
just got here, like,
okay.
As stuff started cracking down.
Yeah.
So
that's always a really chill vibe because there's, like, zero pressure to impress each other because no one's like, oh, I got to pull out my karaoke staple and, like, be real good. Cause, like, someone needs to learn how the machine works and how to look up songs and they don't know what they want to sing yet. And so it's, like, a really fun time.
Karaoke is so different depending on the number of people you are there with. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a crazy different, especially doing it with one other person. It's completely different. And then 3, it changes totally. four or five, once you start to get, okay, you know, I have to like wait my turn. I have to kind of be on stage a little bit. I have to like all fun in different ways.
You have to entertain the group. You also have to look at the songs that have been put in ahead of you so that you don't like suddenly bring the mood to a weird place when like
that's true.
Everyone's too, getting hype and then you pick that World War II memorial song and you're like, oh shit, it's time for this.
Also, if you don't know the word, you don't know if the system is good enough to know the actual words, or sometimes like somebody just fucking typed in what they thought they heard as they were listening to the music. Like sometimes the lyrics will be off in like hilarious, fun ways. But let's see.
That's brave. I went to a underground izakaya for the first time in like 2 years too. The other night, we had this place that we went to right before the pandemic, and it is a classic Japanese like kind of seedy, smoky, you know. Down a deep flight of stairs, in the middle of Meguro thing. And we were like, we loved it. But then the pandemic happened and we were like, oh, can't wait 3 years later when we can go again. But yeah, as somebody said earlier, the numbers are way down right now. Single digits. Today was like 27. So, but you know, it was right after a holiday. So, but like, we just went, we were walking by and we're like, you want to do it? Like, let's just do it. And we went and it was fantastic. Like, it was just a normal izakaya, but after not going to one like that for like 2 years. Oh man, it felt great. It feels almost like cheating because I know this isn't over yet, but
yeah,
it definitely feels a little hopeful, you know?
Yeah, we are currently blessed, certainly right now in Japan. Like, I mean, the numbers don't tell, you know, everything necessarily the present state, but it is a good indication that people are getting vaccinated and wearing masks here, which is not so
which
much
we were
of
doing
a
anyway
problem,
yeah,
right?
Always been the thing. We are at 78%, I think, over 78% of people have gotten at least one shot, and like I think that when you finally start to hit numbers that high, it makes a difference. So
you know what's messed up is you cannot get the first shot now. If you, it's actually really hard to if you have not gotten. I have a friend whose wife was pregnant and didn't get the shots, and she just had her baby, and now they want to. Get these shots and you can't get them. You can't get the first one. They're saving all of them for
they're getting ready for shot number three now.
That's right. Yeah. Which is weird though. Like, I mean, 78% is still, and I mean, I know most of that is kids, but like, there's still some people that are outliers. And especially now, once you're going to have to be required to get, you know, hopefully places will start requiring the, you to be vaccinated. But the second part of that question, favorite horror book, movie, show, and or game, I'm gonna just choose
it has to be horror.
That's what they're getting at. Uzumaki, I was just reading again recently, for people who haven't ever checked that out. That's a horror manga by what's his name? Junji Ito. Have you not read that, John?
No.
You have to read it. It's amazing. So you might have heard his name from, you know, with Silent Hills. He was going to be the artist it was based on. It's killing me that he's done he's a super famous horror manga artist, but and this one is one of his most famous works, but like, check it out. Find it if you can. It's fucking just haunting. It's like literally disturbing in the best way.
Just out of curiosity, like, how are you reading it? Like, are you reading a physical book or are you just reading it on your iPad or something?
No, reading on the iPad. Yep, exactly. Sure. Yeah. I think I might have bought it on Kindle or something. But yeah, it was definitely on the iPad.
I'm asking partly for myself and partly for listeners. Junji Ito is the guy who did the short story about the holes in the canyon shaped like people.
Yep. That
goes viral every, you know, couple of years or something. If you've seen that, that's what it is. That's who that guy is.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? He's probably, this question probably came because we asked for questions like around Halloween. It's probably why there's like this horror thing out of nowhere. But anybody else got a go-to?
I watched Midsommar over a couple months ago.
Nice.
Which the director's cut or whatever. Which
Midsommar,
which was I don't know. I mean, it was It was really fascinating and interesting, but it was the first time in a really long time, years and years, that I kind of had a weird feeling in my stomach after I saw it. You know what I mean? Like, there are some just disturbing ass shit in that movie. It was interesting.
It's funny because people.
Like it sounds weird, but I'm glad I saw it.
Oh, you can like it. Why could you not like it? It's
pretty dark, interesting. Man. It's one of the darkest things I've ever seen. But yeah, it was a thing.
It's funny because it's not like, and most people would say it's not a quote unquote scary movie as much as it is like just disturbing.
It's disturbing.
In this deeply unsettling way. Especially, the ending is interesting too. Like it's very, I really enjoyed that movie. Have you seen, he has another movie. Ari Aster is the guy who directed that. His earlier movie before that is a movie called Hereditary. Have you watched that?
No, actually, but I forget where I've seen it. It's on, maybe it's on Netflix or Prime or something. I keep seeing it passing my by. And then when I always thought like, I kind of want to watch this. And then when I saw it was by the same guy as that, I definitely want to see it. But no,
you should watch it. I need to watch it too. But from all things that I've heard about it, it's like way disturbing, like way more disturbing even than, than that. So that was kind of the one that made him a household name.
We watched Midnight Mass for Halloween. We just been Midnight
Mass. I still have not watched that, and it's on my list because of how many people who have not said anything about what the hell it is or any. I know nothing about it at all except that I've heard a lot of glowing things about it.
I mean, that's the best way to go in my opinion. That's how I feel about a lot of things. Like, I don't want to see trailers before I watch a movie. I don't want you to tell me like, oh, well, this and this and this happens. And then the story is about when this goes down. Like, I don't want you to tell me.
Same. So it's totally good to not know. Especially anything. In horror.
But did you watch either of the Haunting series, either The Haunting of Hill House or The Haunting of Bly Manor?
No, I've heard of them both, but not.
Okay.
Not
that might actually be good then. Cause if you watch those and you go into this one, cause they're by the same creator. If you watch those and go into Midnight Mass hoping for more of the same, you're going to be disappointed. But as its own thing, it's interesting.
Roy, get into the horror.
We're answering horror specifically.
This question, I think because it was Halloween, but it was favorite horror book, movie, show, and or game.
During the pandemic.
I say favorite, but it's kind of more most impactful horror / spooky movie for me is that Midsommar.
We just
did we?
Roy was in the restroom,
The other movies by the same guy, like Hereditary, is also really good. I was going to say related to the question where I was talking about how you're holding up during the pandemic, like one thing I've been watching that has helped, I think, is I've been getting into One Piece just because there's just so damn much of it. I was like, I'm going to watch One Piece every lunch, every like, you know, while I'm eating lunch. I'm up to like episodes
on Japanese
Hulu, I think.
Okay.
But I'm up to like episode 135 or so.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
But for reference, they just had episode 1000 recently. So I've still got a lot of ways to go. Yeah.
I have the first I bought when I was out. I don't have much manga here at all, but I have like five or six books. And one of them is like the first two One Pieces. And every 2 years I start to read. I'm like, okay, this is the year I'm gonna read it. I'm reading in Japanese. I'm like, okay, here we go. I start to read it. The start of it is really good. It's really start of that story, like the first, like the Genesis, when he's a kid and whatever, is awesome, amazing, so good. And then it kind of plateaus for a bit. It probably has to. I mean, I have to do some building and stuff in order for stuff to pay off later, but I just can't make it through that. And I'm sure it gets amazing again really quickly, but I just stop at the same point almost every time and then restart it again 2 years later.
Yeah. Speaking for the show, it's like they kind of hit their stride around close to 100. Before that, it's like, okay, this is really just a show kind of for kids who have dreams. And then there's one arc where there's quite a bit of depth to it as far as like political intrigue going on and like characters disappearing and coming back and everything.
It does get pretty like where adult, well, like gets, adult in the sense that it's got working on different levels and
yeah,
like,
to the point where I can enjoy it. And even the filler starts to get a little better.
Huh.
So like, you know, those valleys that you were talking about where it's like hard to get through. They kind of turn those into, okay, if we're going to have an episode that doesn't really move the major plot along, we'll give you like a little bit more background onto the characters that you know
right.
now.
Right.
And like, I'm cool with that. That's a good way to do it, I think.
Right on. Okay, well, we should probably call it there. We have some more good questions, but we can save those for future podcasts. We'll just talk about Halloween and Halloween-themed spooky, scary stuff for the next, 3 or 4 months, maybe.
Did you guys all watch? I wanted to ask this regardless of the topics that we're on, but have you guys all watched Squid Game yet? Is everybody through that or not yet? Yeah, Roy, you have.
I watched the first episode and then stalled on the second episode when they went back to the real world. It doesn't ruin anything. Okay. but I was intrigued and will watch more.
I tore through it like probably a lot of people did in like a couple days, and now I'm very eager to watch Hellbound, which is like another Korean drama.
I started that
Netflix that's supposed to be good.
Interesting about that is like I'm episode 2 or 3 into it, and they have masked people called VIPs in it, and I'm like,
maybe that's just a thing in Korea.
Yeah.
John? Did you watch in Korean subtitled in?
Yes. English? Korean subtitled in English.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
And did you make sure you were watching the subtitle track, not the audio dub subtitle track? Because apparently that's a big difference.
I don't know. I mean, it's just standard English with subtitles. I'm sorry, Korean with subtitles. So
interesting.
I mean, did you
think
that
some people
were
upset about translation things or something? But nothing bothered me. So
cool. Yeah, I'm sure you got the good revised one.
I mean, my wife is basically half Korean, and so but you know, she lived in Japan her whole life, and so she doesn't like, she speaks Korean and understands it, but she's not like fluent at all. But so it's an interesting thing to watch because there's no perfect language, right? Like for her, it would be probably easier if, you know, it was like subbed in one of her, she speaks Japanese and English fluently, and Korean is like, you know, probably like kid level or something. So, but between the two of us, I think we kind of were able to get, she was able to get nuances that only she could get as someone who, like, you know, knows Korean, and I was obviously there for like to tell, there were some characters in the that speak English, and sometimes it's hard to tell what they're saying, and like I was able to help with stuff like that, but I loved it. Korean dramas now.
Well, there you go. You'd be very happy with Japanese Netflix because the top 10 is all anime and Korean dramas exclusively.
Well, I went into it thinking, and this is my mistake for not knowing any better, but I was like, oh, well, you know, the acting is so shitty in Japan, I'm guessing this is just going to be shit. But they're like leagues beyond Japanese actors in terms of acting ability. Like, it's really, really good. Like, to like a level where it's like, it felt to me at times, I'm not saying all the time, but at times it was like, okay, this is kind of what I expect from a typical like Western drama, not the kind of stuff that you typically get from Japanese TV. So I was really surprised.
I think there's really good, there is really good acting and like nuanced dramas and stuff in Japan, but it is few and far between. And there is more, most of what you get, I mean, it's probably most of what you get anywhere with TV, you know, TV level stuff, but it's like melodrama. It's just like way overacting, and so it's hard to tell even the material or the actor's skill that's bringing it down. But but did you see in Shibuya Mark City the installation, the Squid Game installation that they had there? Oh, really? You should check it out. I don't know if it's still there. It had the one of the very iconic things from the first episode.
It had the lady with the eyeballs. I've seen the memes.
So you know
some
that.
Things
okay,
have been spoiled.
Okay, yes, it had that, and it had, like, the little shape of the Squid Game thing.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. No,
yeah, it's like, take your picture
right now. I would go look, but it's probably closed now. It's late here. So
well, it's right in front of Mark City. If you walk past that part of the, really? The station, like right at the bottom of the escalator, the big escalator down. No kidding. It's right there.
Oh, well, I'm still going to be passing by there, so I'll check it out.
There you go. Cool. Okay. For everybody else, thank you for joining us. That'll do it for this episode. Tell a friend if you liked the show. For the next 2 weeks, what should people do, John?
I'm looking at handle it, right? Gabe's corner of the window, wondering if he's going to like flicker in, come back to life. But it's silent, just quiet. I can hear the dust.
There's a little tumbleweed bouncing by.
Let me think if I can remember this. Peep, it's been a while. You can find us on the interwebs at 8-4.jp. Our second home, giantbomb.com. We are...
A thread on Resetera.
There's a thread on Resetera. We are on Facebook, although I don't... yeah, sure. Like us on Facebook if you're still on Facebook. I don't know that we will be forever. 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. 5 stars on anywhere you rate us and can rate us. You can also find us on Twitter at 84play or our personal Twitters. I am at JohnTV. Mark, how about you?
I'm at MarkBackD. Tina?
I am Tina Butts with 2 T's and a Z. Roy?
And cool. Yeah, tell us, as always, what you thought of this episode could do with more of, less of. Questions or any other feedback you have, we are going to try to be incorporating listener feedback, both directly and indirectly, into the show. So that's it. Very happy Black Friday to you all. Hopefully you had a good Thanksgiving. And until 2 weeks from now, who wants to take us out?
Oh,
shit.
Cat?
My cat just threw up. I gotta clean it up real quick.
Uh-oh.
It's a banana next to 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 a banana.